It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a question for you regarding one of the members of your coronavirus task force, and that's Secretary of HHS, Alex Azar.
Yeah.
On January the 28th, he was in the briefing room, and in the briefing room, he told reporters that for the individual American, the virus should not be an impact on their day-to-day life. 3 months later, more than 55,000 of our fellow Americans have now lost their lives. Mr. President, why is he still your top health advisor? Why is he still serving as the HHS secretary?
Well, I think it's a very unfair question because you have many great professionals. Some of them you have great respect for. And you have many people in the other party. You mentioned Alex Azar, but you have many people in the other party that have said the same thing and with even more confidence. So a lot of people didn't get that right. I was very fortunate, whether it was through luck or whatever, that we closed the border. We put a ban on China other than our citizens coming in. We had our citizens. You can't keep out American citizens. You know, gee, you can't come back into your country. That's a little tough to do. But we put a ban on China. That was very fortunate. But I could tell you that Nancy Pelosi was dancing in the streets in Chinatown. She wanted to go, let's go out and party. Now, that was late into February, so you don't mention that. But you could mention that.
Go President Trump. That was the briefing yesterday just outside the White House. Hang on a second. Sorry, pushing buttons here. That was the briefing yesterday. And, of course, the reporters are hostile as always. And Alex Azar, of course, is the head of Health and Human Services. Alex is under, they hate him. Shall we just say, Roger Severino was our guest, what, last week, 2 weeks ago? Roger works under under Alex Azar. Roger is the head of the Civil Rights Division or the Health and Human Services, and let me just—could I just say that under Health and Human Services, you've seen all these rollbacks of support for Planned Parenthood. You've seen all of these rules protecting girls in sports and gender confusion and all of this. So there's a lot of reasons why the left wants Alex Azar out of there. Get him out of there. Get him out of there. So they're looking for anything they can. You heard the reporter's question. Look, Alex Azar, he is your head of Health and Human Services. And back in January, he said that Americans shouldn't be concerned about the coronavirus. And then the president rightly responded, but he just hinted a little bit at what Nancy Pelosi had done. Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, if Alex Azar in the late part of January said that the virus was not a danger. Oh, by the way, Dr. Fauci said the same thing. But that's another thing altogether. We'll just use Nancy Pelosi as a for instance, and why President was spot on to say to that reporter, you don't talk about her for some reason. Let's listen to Nancy Pelosi in Chinatown in February.
We got some word from her earlier on sort of the message that she's trying to purvey here.
It's exciting to be here, especially at this time, to be able to be unified with our community. We want to be vigilant about what might be on the what is out there in other places. We want to be careful about how we deal with it. But we do want to say to people, come to Chinatown. Here we are. We're, again, careful, safe, and come join us.
Ken, I want to point out that no cases of the coronavirus have been found here in Chinatown or San Francisco at all. So she's really just trying to point that out because they have seen a drop in business
okay,
here.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt the clip. If you could see the clip, she is like huddling in the middle of a bunch of Chinese business people and reporters. They are like face to face, close like we used to be. This is in late February. And this is the Speaker of the House in China. Don't come to Chinatown. And then at the same time, she's talking about how the president is xenophobic and hates Chinese and is responsible for any attacks on the Chinese because he called the virus the Wuhan virus. So yeah, I'm with the president. Reporters kind of like tell the whole truth, and that's why you can't trust them. You do know that by now, don't you? You cannot trust the people that are sitting there allegedly giving you the news. It's like an alternate universe. It really, we have moved to Pravda. I never thought I'd see it in my lifetime. That is when the news reports were all controlled by central government in Russia. It was Pravda, it was Radio Moscow. And I was in the jaws of Radio Moscow before the Soviet Union broke up. I was the one of the first probably the first American to broadcast from Radio Moscow with the help of our Russian engineer named Sasha. I interviewed the English language programmer for Radio Moscow, who was part of the KGB. It was an operation that was incredible, feeding out every day propaganda to the Russian people, lie after lie after lie. And so what have we got now? What have we got now? And I'll give you another example. We've heard the president, of course, speak about hydroxychloroquine and its effects. It's way back. Remember how he was attacked on talking about how good that was? And so reporters, I'm just going to give you a taste because we have talked about this enough. Reporters, you know, oh, the president is so stupid. And, you know, how dare he talk about that? There's no reports about that. In fact, so media, this is a current media montage to see how they have reported hydroxychloroquine. Let's listen.
Clip 10. President loses more Americans over the course you know what? Of 6 Clip weeks 10. And died in the entirety of the country.
Several Devin new studies, including one by the VA, say the drug may actually harm critically ill patients.
Studies in the U.S. From the VA and now from New York State that show no benefit or even a potential harm in the case of the VA study.
Where is the evidence that they're using to determine that it's safe to continue? When we've got this study, we have seen no other evidence coming out that it is beneficial.
All right, so that's just a bit of it. So the study came out, as you know, last week from the VA, they said, and they examined, I think, somewhere around 900 veterans who were tested positive for COVID, and they found that hydroxychloroquine was terrible. In fact, it did not help any of them, and also it caused heart attacks, and so that was the report. Well, interestingly enough, Dr. Stephen Smith was on with Laura Ingraham last night, and he had a lot to say about that. And so let's just listen to a little bit of it. Let's listen.
There's already plenty of evidence to establish that treatment of this population with this combination regimen designed by Dr. Raoul and colleagues works. It certainly doesn't harm people. And I have data that fit with Dr. Raoul's data. Of course, his are more substantial than ours even. We are up to almost 200 patients, Laura. But the exact same thing. If people are going to go bad, they go bad early. That means that something we're doing is working. And the odds of that not happening, that happening by chance, as we discussed a long time ago, are 10 to the minus 27th or whatever. So we know the combination is changing the course of disease. And we know now the French data are extremely strong. So you can't ethically deny that. What would you say to the patient's family? It's unbelievable. That's not a study at all. They don't even list the dosages of hydroxychloroquine or azithromycin used. If a pill got dispensed from the formula, Dr. Imbati and the two other MDs on that study, the other rest are PharmDs and statisticians, are not clinicians. They're all trained in ophthalmology. Dr. Imbati is a renowned macular degeneration researcher. I have no idea why he delved into this study, which isn't a study. It's a sham. I can't believe anyone took this seriously. There's not one dosage listed, cumulative or daily, of hydroxychloroquine or azithromycin, and people call this a study. Not one person in that paper saw one COVID patient. Only three of MDs, all are ophthalmology trained. I went to UVA, so I just looked up to see if they were in the ID department, like, you know, my friends are. They're in the something about the vision department. Dr. Imbati is a basic science researcher. That's fine. He's good at that. The other two MDs in that study, Dr. Prayer and the third MD, Narendran, they're ophthalmology trained in other countries, and they work in Dr. Imbati's lab. It's a sham. It's a shame on UVA. I sent an email to the dean of the med school at UVA. I have not heard back from him. It is an embarrassment that UVA allows this thing to be called a study.
All right, so that's the. I'm going to interrupt him. You heard enough of that. That's a Dr. Stephen Smith, and we'll put that clip on our Facebook page so that you can share it. So his point is that total sham. That study, of course, got lots of play. And Sunday, when I was watching Fox News Sunday with Chris Wallace, my favorite Fox anchor, I noticed he featured a doctor. He spent a long time with him, and the doctor was talking also about hydroxychloroquine and how people were dying from taking it and how it had no effect. He said other things too, but that stood out to me. And then I looked more carefully at his qualifications and realized, why, shock of all shock, he works for Bloomberg, Michael Bloomberg, who hates President Trump, was his rival, spent millions trying to get him out of the presidential race. So I guess, you know, maybe he has another reason for lying about that. Dr. Stephen Smith doesn't. And so there are lots of interesting things happening. Oh, there! I have so many things to tell you. I just want to point to this. Stephen Hilton, who I don't normally quote because I don't usually watch his show or pay attention, but when I hear him, I like him. He wrote an article called "What Do We Have to Do to Get Our Leaders to Follow the Coronavirus Data and Science and End the Shutdown?" And then he talks about 21% of New York residents have had coronavirus, nearly 500,000 in Los Angeles and Santa Clara County. Up to 85 times more people have had it than official stats complain. He talks about it's closer. The fatality rate is closer to 0.01. We were told, of course, something very different. It's a great article. I don't have time to spend any more time on it, but we'll put that on our Facebook page. Steve's challenge as to why we are not getting our leaders to update their information. I have had the same question, even out of the White House. Why can't we, Vice President Pence, why can't we kind of change the talking points? Why can't we sort of start morphing our message more to what we're actually seeing? And that's what I'm encouraging. And so far, I haven't seen too much of it, except the president who breaks out, you know, in his own unique way and says, we got to get back to work. And we do have to get back to work. By the way, the doctors that I played for you, quite a bit of their press conference yesterday, Dr. Erickson and Dr. Masihi, who are co-owners of a urgent care business throughout the state of California. Well, great. I really still think you should listen, except if you try, YouTube has taken it down. Yeah, you can't, you know, you're not allowed to watch stuff that, you know, does not hold to the party line. That's where we are, whether it's on Facebook or whether it's on YouTube, whether it's on Twitter. This is a weird and strange and dangerous world we find ourselves in. But someone has taken the time to create another link, and we will put that on our Facebook page, okay? So it's a link to that press conference with Dan Erickson and Dr. Masihi. If you haven't seen it, you should. They were on with Laura Ingraham last night, and they did a great job. And basically, they keep talking about how we need to stop the shutdown because we need to develop herd immunity, that viruses will not stop unless it runs its course through the population. And if you hide people away, it's just going to break out again. And I don't think they're saying it's going to be worse. I think that's what the left hopes. It's going to be worse. You know, it's going to take us through November so that we have to do mail-in balloting. That's only fair, they keep telling us. By the way, Texas stay-at-home order expires on Thursday. Lots of states are opening up. There is a great article by George Rasley. I didn't get to this. I'm going to come back to that. Attorney General Barr has directed federal prosecutors to report restrictive state and local coronavirus edicts. And so he's the place to go. It is the Justice Department. If you are in a state and you see abuses of power by your local authorities, by your governor, the federal government through the state Justice Department are all ears about this. Thank God for General Barr. All right. So meanwhile, we have an election coming up. Did you know that? It's a presidential election year. And we're going to talk to Rick Manning of America's for Limited Government about this because he's in the know. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The Word of God tells us many times in one way or another, fear not. Today in the world, many are very fearful afraid of the coronavirus and other perils that are going on in our world. Psalm 91 verses 1 and 2 tells us, "He who dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, He is my refuge and my fortress. My God, in Him I will trust." I'm Joseph Parker, and we here at the American Family Association would like to remind you, fear not, put your trust in the Lord. We'd like to both encourage and challenge you to aggressively put your faith to work. Certainly use wisdom and insight that government and medical professionals are encouraging, but first, put your trust in the Lord. We'd like to encourage you to pray Psalm 91 daily for yourself and your family and keep your trust in Him. If you'd like to get a copy of the Psalm 91 prayer for yourself, email us here at psalm91@afa.net.
So, I don't know if you saw this, but there was just this big study about anxiety among us. Really interesting in this study about what can keep us up at night. One of the top stressors out of all the things to worry about is paying for healthcare. A huge majority of us say we're worried about that. It's totally understandable, but there's an affordable alternative to health insurance. It's MediShare. It's a Christian healthcare sharing ministry, and it has worked beautifully for more than 25 years. And not only do people save lots of money, they get access to a huge network of doctors. They get to take advantage of 24/7 live access online where they can talk to a doctor and even get prescriptions. And of course, there is the savings. With MediShare, the typical family saves $500 a month. That can help you sleep easier too. There's a lot to love about it. No wonder it's grown so much. Here is the number to find out more. Call 833-44-BIBLE. That's 833-44-BIBLE. 833-44-BIBLE.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. I need you to do something right now, folks. Text #250 with the keyword baby. We are in a crisis point in American history, and there is growing concern that the nation's abortion rate is about to explode. So I need your help right now to save the life of an unborn child. And that's why I'm partnering with Preborn, an organization equipping pregnancy centers with ultrasound machines. 80% of women who have an ultrasound save their child. So get on your phone right now. Text #250 with the keyword baby. Text #250 with the keyword baby. A few weeks ago, New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio threatened to permanently shut down any church or synagogue that held public gatherings in their houses of worship. Mosques were noticeably absent from the mayor's mandate. In the days leading up to Easter Sunday, city leaders doubled down on the crackdowns. But City Hall is using a very different approach with Muslims celebrating Ramadan. As a matter of fact, the mayor announced the Big Apple will provide more than 500,000 free halal meals across the city. And by free, he means funded by American taxpayers. The mayor says the Department of Education will set up feeding stations in several predominantly Muslim communities. Now, that's a noble effort, but it's curious the city did not offer the same sort of potluck buffet to Christians or Jews. Intentional or not, New York City is sending a message to the religious community that special accommodations are being afforded to Muslims. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Joe Biden still hasn't won enough delegates to officially clinch the Democratic nomination, and the biggest prize left on the calendar just got canceled. New York's presidential primary, June 23rd.
I'm not going to second-guess the Board of Elections.
New York doesn't allow uncontested primaries, so the Board of Elections says Joe Biden is effectively the winner. But Bernie Sanders had been asking to stay on the ballot, and his campaign now says New York has clearly violated its approved delegate selection plan. If this is not remedied, New York should lose all its delegates to the 2020 Democratic National Convention. Those delegates are critical to the plan Sanders laid out when he suspended.
We must continue working to assemble as many delegates as possible at the Democratic Convention, where we will be able to exert significant influence over the party platform and other functions.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi endorsed Biden today.
And as we face coronavirus, Joe has been a voice of reason and resilience with a clear path to lead us out of this crisis.
As new evidence emerges, a former Biden staffer, Tara Reid's mother, went looking for advice from Larry King in 1993 about how to best handle her daughter's allegations of unwanted sexual contact, allegations Biden hasn't addressed personally, but the campaign denies.
My daughter has just left there after working for a prominent senator and could not get through with her problems at all. And the only thing she could have done was go to the press, and she chose not to do it out of respect for him.
Biden has published podcasts and hosted Zoom meetings and sat for a handful of one-on-one interviews, but he has not had a virtual press conference to field questions from the reporters who have covered his campaign for a year since April 2nd. That's 3.5 weeks ago.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. That's just amazing. And that's really amazing to me, that report from Peter Ducey of Fox. When you consider that a poll just out, and I read another poll to you yesterday. This one is, let's see now, it's USA Today, Suffolk University. It says that 48 to 38% of people polled would vote for Joe Biden. And 8 to 9%, 8 would back a third-party candidate, 9% would be undecided. And without a third-party candidate, the national survey shows that Biden tops Trump 50 to 40%. So that's what we're reading. That's what we're being told. And yet, it defies logic to me. I think about Joe Biden's actions a long time ago. Many of us that have been around a long time, we know that Joe Biden is a serial liar, among other things. And there's a clip that's just resurfaced. It just came to my attention yesterday that I want to play for you. This took place, you know, I don't know what the date on this clip is, but I want to guess, oh, too many decades have passed, but it might be the 80s. But this is Joe Biden, and this is a news report, Sam Donaldson reporting. So you know it has to be true, right? Okay, so this is clip 12.
Two questions stem from taped remarks of Biden during an April campaign appearance in New Hampshire.
I went to law school on a full academic scholarship, the only one in my class to have a full academic scholarship. Went back to law school and, in fact, ended up in the top half of my class. I was the outstanding student in the political science department at the end of my year. I graduated with 3 degrees from undergraduate school and 165 credits, only needed 123 credits.
Biden now concedes he did not graduate in the top half of his law school class, that he does not have 3 degrees from college, and that he was not named outstanding political science student in college.
Newsweek says Biden actually went to school on a half scholarship, ended up near the bottom of his class, and won only 1 degree, not 3.
Joe Biden ranked 76th in a class of 85 at the University of Syracuse Law School. I mean, this guy comes off this whole thing as a flyweight.
Now Biden says Newsweek is right. His memory had failed him.
Joseph.
I mean, that's amazing. That's older than the 80s. That's not Sam Donaldson. It's, I can't think of their names. They're anchors that used to be so familiar to us many years ago. I've asked Rick Manning to join me this morning because Rick is really has his finger on the pulse of all things political, and he and I are very good friends. We see things alike, so you won't get a lot of controversy in this conversation, but Rick is the founder and president of Americans for Limited Government. He's a host for Breitbart Radio. He's the co-author of Necessary Noise with our friend Star Parker. It's Necessary Noise, How Donald Trump Inflames the Culture War and Why This is Good News for America. And he joins us this morning. Rick, thanks for joining me.
Hey, Sandy. I think that was Huntley and Brinkley.
Oh, yeah, you're right. That's right. I couldn't see them. I could only hear them, and I could not remember. I know you are absolutely right. So that goes back a long way. That has to be the 70s, I'm thinking. Yeah.
Well, I think he was running for president in 80, so maybe 76. The point is, Joe Biden's been around a long time, and he has yet to find the truth on that path.
Yeah, for sure. Now, I don't know if you heard me talking about this poll, because it's not the first one that's been out. I remember reporting Fox poll just a few days ago. Maybe it was the end of last week. But this one from USA Today, Suffolk University, says, you heard it, I think, that the numbers are that the Democratic nominee, Vice President Biden, with any nominee for vice president, would beat Donald Trump 44 to 38%. And they say that there, if there's a third-party candidate, Biden will beat Trump by 10%. Now, here's an interesting thing, Rick. It says, if you haven't seen this particular poll, it says that Trump leads among men 46 to 35%, while Biden holds a massive 53 to 30% advantage among women. Okay, there's a lot to say there, so I'm just going to be quiet. What do you think about this poll, and what do you think about those little tallies I just gave you?
Well, I think there's a couple of things that we have to look at. And number one, I don't really think any poll that's being taken in the midst of this pandemic has much value. For the very simple reason that there is a we're being buffeted back and forth. Life is being thrown upside down. Donald Trump was going to win overwhelmingly because of the economy. And he, in order to, because the white lab coat people told him 2 million Americans would die, he chose to really put a halt to the economy. He risked his presidency in order to take the actions that were recommended. I think what the proof's going to be is what happens between now and Election Day related to getting back to work, not having 30 million people unemployed, and creating some kind of normalcy. But it's but having said that, the gender demographics in the poll are interesting. It's hard to it's hard to really gather much there. It may be why Biden is so desperate to not have the sexual harassment suit that conversation that's occurring. I'll just give you my gut. My gut says Joe Biden will not be the Democratic nominee.
Do you still say you know? I thought that too, Rick. But
you
still think he won't be? I have not thought so up until lately, and they seem to be like since all of them are endorsing him. I sort of thought, no. I guess this is going to happen. I think they're crazy, although crazy like a fox, because you and I both know if he gets elected, he will not be running the country, and they'll have their their person behind the scenes pulling the strings. Why wouldn't they go that direction? Considering these polls,
well, I will tell you. I think that they're setting it up so they don't have to nominate him. Everybody's going to jump on board and say, "Yeah, Joe Biden's a nominee." And then around between June 1 and July 4, they'll be shocked to discover that there are credible charges against Biden. And oh, by the way, there's real questions as to whether or not he can handle the job, and he's just declined. And so at that point, they'll pick who they want. And it's but nobody wants to be the one who's holding out saying, oh, I'm not supporting Biden, because if you're holding out, not supporting Biden right now, you're ineligible to be chosen to be the one they pick. So it's
okay, that makes sense.
So that makes sense. Sandy, you and I know this because we're in this world, but this is not Washington, D.C. is not a world where people are faithful, true, and straight as an arrow. In fact, in most cases, if you hear a politician talking about something and the more adamant they are, a lot of times the less they believe it. So and on the Democrat side, this is abundantly true. There is so much, everybody in the Democratic Party, they're much more oriented towards power than people in the Republican Party. It's everybody's oriented towards power, but the Democrats are particularly, they know if they don't have power, they don't have anything, because they view government as being the all-being kind of thing. Whereas if you happen to be from a Judeo-Christian orientation, you don't view government as being an all-being. You view God is sovereign. You view Christ in the role of being the guideposts. But if you don't have that, government, all-powerful government matters. It's being in control of it means you are effectively God. So that's what drives a lot of these people, and they will do anything to get in that seat of power. So, and this is not new in politics, but I think one party is more susceptible to it. And we're going to see that play out with Joe Biden.
Yeah. Let me just interject that a mutual friend of ours, George Rasley, has written a great piece. It was published this morning, and if I have time later, I'll get back to it. It's called Anti-Lockdown Protests and the Defiant Protestant Heart of America. George sort of breaks down kind of the fabric of America, even though America may not realize the theology of their founders has affected the way they view things, that just about what you just said, Rick, in regard to taking, feeling like you must do everything that Big Brother says, when you know in Scripture, and it's a correlation, that you obey God rather than man, and you have a conscience that you can exercise. And he talks about how that affects the way people are responding with these shutdowns. And by the way, we'll put that on our Facebook page. I want to talk, go back to something else, Rick, just practical. Now, the New York primary has been canceled, and Bernie Sanders' supporters are a little bit upset. In fact, I want to play a clip for you. This is Tazine Figaro, and she was, I guess, one of the Sanders' higher-ups. She's pretty upset. Let's just listen just a little bit to what she says. Clip 9.
This is the part where I normally laugh with my head all the way back, as if this was just something that is breaking news. This is not breaking news. This is Nancy Pelosi has endorsed Joe Biden from the very beginning, where this is no secret. You know, the establishment is going to do what the establishment does. When we look at the Bernie on the ballot, you know, once again, another debacle, pretending as if Bernie Sanders is going to continue to fight to be on the ballot in New York is another issue that we're dealing with as well this morning. All of this is fraudulent, to be quite honest with you. And I think people are just even more disappointed to show the games that continue to be played. You know, either Bernie Sanders is going to unsuspend his campaign and run this race or sit down. Mm-hmm. It's really just that simple. They've already coalesced behind Joe Biden. He's coalesced behind Joe Biden. He said he's going to do everything possible to make sure that his friend is running. Senator Sanders, stop playing games. At the end of the day, you've already sealed the deal. When you went in to make the deal, to go ahead and pass your movement over, you made the deal then. You already know what Joe Biden's going to do. You already know what policies he will adopt and will he and what he won't adopt. Otherwise, you would not have endorsed Joe Biden. So to pretend as if, oh, you know, I'm going to endorse, but one minute I still want to be on the ballot. I want to get delegates. Why continue to play with these people's pain in this way? Continue to have people donate their last $3. Continue to have people hoping and praying for this behind-the-scenes revolution. It's wrong and it's fraudulent. Either you are going to get on the ballot today and unsuspend your campaign or stop the games. It's just that plain and simple. This is wrong. You have people who are crying and really hoping and believing in this man. Oh, maybe Bernie down the road, maybe he'll fight behind the scenes. No, revolutions don't work that way. If it's not behind the scene, if it's not on the scene, then it's not behind the scene. Either it is or it's not. This is a fraudulent game, Senator Sanders. Stop playing with these folks. Get on the ballot or sit down.
All right, that's Tazine Figaro, a big Sanders supporter, and she's pretty upset. What's going on with Bernie Sanders? What do you think, Rick? Why is he playing this game? Because she's right about that.
He has dropout remorse. The all the stuff that's come out related to Tara Reid has Bernie sitting there saying, "Wait a second," figuring it just the way I am. Delegates at the convention mean power. And for him to not gather as many delegates as he can at the convention limits his power. And at the very least, it means the power to be able to try to force a vice presidential candidate onto the ticket. And that's a, and that's real power. So it is a, so I think that Bernie has looked at it. He's saying, we don't, you know, I need as many delegates as possible because otherwise, we're just going to get steamrolled. And this is an indicator that he doesn't necessarily believe that Joe Biden is going to be the nominee. In fact, he believes that somebody like Andrew Cuomo is likely to be the nominee. And he wants to have the power to leverage whoever is chosen by the convention to have to listen to his point of view. And it's not about the platform. It's about the vice president.
Rick, we just have a few seconds left, and I am going to ask if you will stay with me for a few more minutes. Can you?
Sure.
Okay. All right. Yep. But the question is, what was the question? I had a question. I want to know what you think about what's going to happen this summer with both conventions. If you have an idea, you just said Andrew Cuomo, but if you have an idea yourself of who you think that Democratic nominee might be, how is the campaign going to play out? Is there going to be a debate between President Trump and Joe Biden? Mail-in ballots. Are they going to really, really land the plane with these mail-in ballots? Because the left is pushing for that. So those are just some of the things I'd like to talk to you about in a minute. My guest is Rick Manning. He's the author of Necessary Noise, How Donald Trump Inflames the Culture War and Why This is Good News for America. Also, he is a president of Americans for a Limited Government. He's a Breitbart, a radio host, and a good friend of mine. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
You shall have no other gods before me. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. In 1954, Americans lived under constant threat of nuclear attack from the USSR. When America's children practiced duck and cover in classrooms across the country, President Eisenhower realized that our pledge had no distinction from any other republic. After hearing a sermon on February 7th of that year, President Eisenhower signed a law adding the words "under God" to our pledge. The president recognized the true source of unity, of indivisibility, is unwavering submission to the God of the Bible. As we go about our day, let us all remember the only true source of national unity is submission to Almighty God.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Hi, this is Pastor Robert Morris. I'm often asked, how do I grow in my relationship with the Lord? How do I hear God? What is God's plan and purpose for me? I want to personally invite you to join me on Sunday mornings right here on AFR for worship and the Word. And we will discover the answer to these questions together. We'll explore the truths found in God's Word that will help you strengthen your faith and develop a more intimate relationship with Him.
Some Christians, at least, will rise up and say, no, no, I'm not.
And so right away, I realized that this is not a cake that I can create.
I'm not baking your cake. I'm not making your floral arrangement. I'm not photographing your so-called same-sex wedding ceremony. No, I'm not doing that. Because the Word of God teaches that what you're doing is an abomination to God, and I am not going to participate.
The Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson. Weekdays at noon Central on American Family Radio.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. COVID-19 is part of the SARS family of viruses. Dr. Anthony Fauci, who heads the Coronavirus Task Force, has known since 2005 that hydroxychloroquine, HCQ, works against the SARS family of viruses because of research done by the National Institutes of Health, of which he is the head. The NIH said in 2005, quote, chloroquine is a potent inhibitor of SARS coronavirus infection and spread. This is why it's been so effective treating coronavirus patients today, with some doctors finding a 100% cure rate if it's administered at the first sign of symptoms. If Dr. Fauci had advocated the use of HCQ from the beginning, it's possible nobody would have needed to die. America deserves an explanation.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affley with the Secure Freedom Minute. When this traumatic period's history is written, one public figure will stand out as having presciently and courageously warned of the threats we are facing from the Chinese Communist Party. Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton often is assailed for making observations that flout the prevailing conventional wisdom, only to be proven right. That's likely true of his latest accusation that the CCP deliberately and consciously allowed vast numbers of Chinese to travel abroad after it determined how dangerous the Wuhan virus was, but before the rest of us had a clue. The CCP did it malevolently, Senator Cotton contends, to infect and damage the rest of the world rather than contain the suffering and cost within its own borders. If Senator Cotton's right about this charge, too, it would constitute an epic crime against humanity, and the CCP perpetrators must be punished. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
The questions stem from taped remarks of Biden during an April campaign appearance in New Hampshire.
I went to law school on a full academic scholarship, the only one in my class to have a full academic scholarship. Went back to law school and, in fact, ended up in the top half of my class. I was the outstanding student in the political science department at the end of my year. I graduated with 3 degrees from undergraduate school and 165 credits, only needed 123 credits.
Biden now concedes he did not graduate in the top half of his law school class, that he does not have 3 degrees from college, and that he was not named outstanding political science student in college.
Newsweek says Biden actually went to school on a half scholarship, ended up near the bottom of his class, and won only one degree, not three.
Joe Biden ranked 76th in a class of 85 at the University of Syracuse Law School. I mean, this guy comes off this whole thing as a flyweight.
Now Biden says Newsweek is right. His memory had failed him. Joseph.
All right, that's amazing. That's an amazing clip. I wanted you to hear it again. And there were several familiar faces in that broadcast whose names I could not remember. I think one was David Brinkley. But that's just amazing. That's when Biden was running for president. There were no dates or any monikers on that clip at all. So, sorry. And I was trying to find it during the break, but I wish I could be more specific. But you get the gist of it. You get the point. It did make me long for the days when we did actually trust news anchors. Let me just say that Walter Cronkite was a huge fraud. Many of you loved him. I know for a fact that he was a huge liar. I knew that when I finally got met the doctor that they used to feed them Walter Cronkite the numbers of alleged coat hanger abortions, Bernard Nathanson. I remember having dinner with him. He talked about how he was part of the whole pro abortion movement and how they fabricated all that stuff and fed it to Cronkite on a weekly basis, on a daily basis, I guess. And Cronkite faithfully, you know, gave out those numbers, knowing full well they were false. Also, he was, counting body bags in the Vietnam War to try to stop the war. He was a real leftist. But there were others who you could trust, like David Brinkley and whatever the other guy's name was. But I miss those days. I really miss those days. And by contrast, let me give you just a snippet of yesterday in the outside the White House when President Trump was trying to, you know, answer questions of the reporters. Some, you know, they're all young, but they all know so much. They know so much. One thing they don't know, though, is how to respect the president of the United States. So here's the last question the president received. It's clip 14. Let's listen.
If an American president loses more Americans over the course of 6 weeks than died in the entirety of the Vietnam War, does he deserve to be reelected?
So, yeah, we've lost a lot of people. But if you look at what original projections were, 2.2 million, we're probably heading to 60,000, 70,000. It's far too many. One person is too many for this. And I think we've made a lot of really good decisions. The big decision was closing the border or doing the ban. People coming in from China, obviously, other than American citizens, which had to come in. Can't say you can't come in, you can't come back to your country. I think we've made a lot of good decisions. I think that Mike Pence and the task force have done a fantastic job. I think that everybody working on the ventilators, you see what we've done there, have done unbelievable. The press doesn't talk about ventilators anymore. They just don't want to talk about them, and that's okay. But the reason they don't want to talk, that was a subject that nobody would get off of. They don't want to talk about them. We're in the same position on testing. We are lapping the world on testing, and the world is coming to us, as I said. They're coming to us saying, what are you doing? How do you do it? We're helping them. So, no, I think we've done a great job. And one person, I will say this, one person is too many.
I thought that, first of all, the reporter had so much pique. You know, her mother should slap her. All I can say is ill-raised, poorly trained children we have produced who have no respect. The snarky question is, should a president be reelected that has, overseen more deaths than those in the Vietnam War? Should they still be president? And the president then responded really incredibly, with incredible character, and answered her in a way that didn't answer her. He gave her kind of I'm going to get myself in trouble with this, but a Jesus-like response. He didn't answer her question directly. He gave her a better answer than she deserved. And a good answer for the rest of the world. Rick Manning is my guest, president of Americans for Limited Government, host for Breitbart Radio, and the co-author of Necessary Noise. Rick, okay, just your thoughts about that clip. I've already said plenty, but I thought you might have a thought or two.
Yeah, what you're listening to is the constant barrage that the president faces when he gets up and talks about this. And you know, it's perfectly legitimate to be asking questions about a whole lot of different things. You know, what are there cures on the horizon? What is being done to get the economy back to work? I can think of a lot of questions which are relevant. But what they press in today's world, the press is a gotcha press. They don't really care about answers. they care about questions that are, you know, have you beat your wife lately kind of questions that there's no answer to that is a direct yes or no answer. So it's that's what they attempt to do. And the so-called reporter, the person who is allowed in the White House press room by the White House Correspondents' Council, that person was asking a gotcha question designed to get exactly what she got. She got her question asked on this radio program. She's getting her question asked around the country, and she accomplished what she wanted. She got she made a point, and you know, it doesn't mean if the point is valid or not. It's just her objective was to get on the news so she can say on her resume, I got all these clips, and somebody else will hire her for more money to do the same thing next time. You know, we live in an Instagram, YouTube world, this is an Instagram, YouTube kind of mindless question, but it's what gets you rewarded in the marketplace of advertising now.
It gets you tweeted out. And so, now we know. And so now we have President Trump, who really, I think, has become a giant of a man in this. I do. He's been amazing. I heard a statement yesterday, Rick, something about Nancy Pelosi is being paid for doing nothing while Donald Trump is being paid nothing for doing everything. You know, he's giving away his salary every month. He just donated it last week. And I thought that was pretty profound. Nancy Pelosi is being paid to do nothing while President Trump is being paid nothing to do everything. I think that's fair.
I think I do, too. I have to tell you, I've never seen a president put as much into a job as this guy does, and in this battle, he has really done incredible work to try to do a couple of things. When he finds problems in the bureaucracy that won't allow private sector to develop cures or tests or ventilators or whatever it is, he breaks the barrier. He takes a sledgehammer to it and breaks it. And because of that, we're going to end up with testing that works in all sorts of different ways. But also, we're going to end up with breakthrough cures for viruses, for coronaviruses that didn't exist before, because we're putting so much lead on the target and so many different people are exploring so many different ideas. And they're being allowed to because the FDA is getting out of the way by and large. A decade from now, we will look at this similarly in terms of medicine, similarly to how people looked at the space program and miniaturized computing. That's the level of impact this is going to have long term. It's because this president is forcing is allowing the private sector to come up with solutions.
You know, Rick,
the CDC failed. They couldn't come up with tests. Their tests didn't work. Their tests were failures. It wasn't until the private sector got involved and got the government out of the way that we had tests involved, and that is directly a result of Donald Trump.
I also want to repeat something you said early in the show, Rick, when you pointed out that President Trump, he was virtually a shoo-in to win in November. He was. The economy was just gangbusters, incredible, more jobs than, since the 70s. And so it was kind of a given. The Democrats were on the run and scared. And yet he actually did sacrifice his strong economy, which he did build, which is what he was running on. He listened to Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birx. Now, that's a whole other issue. I've talked about it pretty much daily since that time. He listened to them because they told him so many Americans were going to die. And he basically oversaw the shutdown of his successful economy and took a risk, a huge risk, that he would not be reelected in order to save lives. You have said that, and I want to repeat what you said because I think it's profound. Now, given that, I want to ask you some practical questions, because if, let's assume, Joe Biden is the, you know, heir apparent right now for, you know, at least for the Democratic nomination. And so do you think there will be a debate between Joe Biden and Donald Trump?
Well, assuming Joe Biden is the nominee, I do believe there will be a debate. I believe that they will be on the same stage. I believe they will be 6 feet apart. And there will be some kind of direct conversation between the two of them. I think it will be very limited because Biden won't want to do that, which once again is why I really don't think the Democrats are going to allow Biden to be the nominee, because that debate, the having to appear on the same stage, is something that I don't think that the former vice president can do. So it would be grueling. It'd be 90 minutes, the two of them, and people would come away saying, I can't have that guy in charge. So ultimately, if Biden is, there will be a debate between President Trump and the Democratic nominee. I think there'll be multiple debates, and the formatting will be an attempt to have the panel spend a lot of time talking with questions, which are really making points, and whoever the Democratic nominee, Biden, being protected, because the panel questions will be making his points.
Just to illustrate what you're saying, we don't have time to get off on this right now, but Tara Reid, the accuser of Joe Biden, the news media is not asking Joe Biden any questions about that. They're not even reporting on it, except for Fox. And then I've already played twice in this show this morning the kinds of questions that the press is asking President Trump in the Rose Garden after these briefings. So this is what it's going to be like. I agree with you. They will do what they always do, but maybe people will be more aware of it. Well, there'll be no challenges to Joe, as you just said, or whoever the nominee is. And there will be all these gotcha questions from these allegedly neutral hosts. Now, the second thing is, do you have an idea? Do you think it's going to be Chris Cuomo? Do you think there's some person that stands out to you as a likely nominee to take over if Joe implodes?
Well, I think Chris Cuomo is the logical person. The people who ran were rejected. The 16, 20 people who ran were rejected by the Democratic primary voters. They're not going to pick Bernie Sanders they're not going to pick Bernie Sanders. What new face can they put out who has credibility? Well, you know, Cuomo's been on our TV live every day for the last 30 days, and he has been a loud, vociferous voice, and sometimes he's been seeming to be in control. But I think the thing, he gave a passion statement last week against reopening, and it was a passion statement that talked about how this is COVID is death, and we can't have death. And I was just struck by that because he's the guy who sat there and gleefully signed a postnatal abortion bill. He's the guy
who proudly
signed it. It's the most chilling picture I think I've ever seen, that bill signing ceremony. It was horrific.
Rick, we're running out of time. I hear you, and you made your point. Quickly, though, mail-in ballots, 15 seconds. Will they succeed in getting mail-in ballots?
We will not have mail-in ballots in the 2020 election.
Well, thus saith Rick, and you know what? He's usually right. So, Rick Manning, President of America's for Limited Government, it's been great. Thanks for talking with us this morning, Rick. And by the way, you can reach, your official website is getliberty.org, right?
Yeah, getliberty.org, or go to reopenamericanow.org, reopenamericanow.org.
Reopenamericanow.org. Rick Manning, Americans for Limited Government. Thank you, Rick. Sandy Rios in the morning, AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.